Hello and welcome to another Cherish Digital podcast with me, Jonathan Chevalier. Welcome back and thanks for joining us for another episode. I'm really excited about today's pod as we're tackling two very important topics in one session. The session was originally intended to explore in more detail the Service Recipes Initiative, which the Catalyst launched in the spring to help charities with digital service delivery. To do this, we brought together the originator of the concept with two charities who've been involved with the initiative to talk about their experiences. In particular, we're going to be talking about the recipe on providing devices and training to increase digital inclusion. This is an area that has really come to the fore since lockdown, with charities pivoting to more digital service delivery. So it's going to be really great to explore this topic today, as well as the broader Service Recipe Initiative. So after that rather long intro, I want to move to introduce today's guest. So first of all, we've got Eve Critchley, Digital Innovation Lead at Hestia. Eve has been a user of Service Recipes.
Hi, everyone.
And then we've got Fariha Usman, founder at Being Woman. Fariha has contributed a service recipe.
Hello, everyone.
And then we have Chris Thorpe, Head of Technology at CAST and for The Catalyst. Chris is the originator of the service recipe concept in the charity sector.
Hello, everyone. Lovely to be here.
Good. So just as a background point, as with all of our podcasts over recent months, this has been recorded from home, so there may be some variability in sound quality. But let's move into the core content for today. And I want to first of all start off by just getting a little bit more flavour of each of our guests today. Maybe start with you, Eve. Can you just tell us a little bit about what your organisation does?
Sure. So I work for Hestia, and we're a charity that supports children and adults in crisis. We're one of the largest providers of refuges in London and South East, and we're the main organisation supporting victims of modern slavery in the capital.
Brilliant. And Fariha, can you tell us more about Being Woman, please?
Yeah, so Being Woman is a charity. We are based in Ashington, Northumberland, though we cover more areas in Northumberland as well and the surrounding. What we do is we provide digital skills mainly to women and wider community to promote digital and social inclusion. We also have a domestic abuse service provision along with the mental health services and open hosted conversations just to promote digital and social inclusion, and also to make sure that everybody is included when we're talking about digital here. So thank you.
Lovely. Let's go to you, Chris. Can you tell us more about what the purpose of the Service Recipes Initiative is, please?
Yeah, of course. So to give a bit of background, so for those of you who don't know, CAST is a charity that helps other charities to create better digital services through understanding user needs and behaviours. And Catalyst is a sort of multi-organisation effort to scale that up across the whole of the sector. One of the parts of Catalyst that I look after is reuse. And reuse is about taking tools that already exist, either from the commercial sector or the charity sector, and getting them reused by other organizations. We think that although every charity is unique and the situations of all the beneficiaries are unique, there are some commonalities, and there are obviously some lessons that can be learned around the sort of the tools that charities use to help their beneficiaries. And Service Recipes is one of our first products around that. You were very kind to say that I was the originator. It was a team effort, very much so. And actually, it's a piece of reuse in itself. So late last year, we spoke to an organization called FutureGov, who normally work in the local government space, and they had built a platform to share and describe service patterns for local government. And a service pattern is something like applying for child support, for example, or registering yourself as homeless. And we felt there was a lot of applicability to this approach for the charity sector. And we did a period of work with them early on in 2020 to look at how we could bring the service patterns idea to the sector. And what we decided to do was to pivot slightly to still reuse a lot of the work that they'd done, but to actually make some recipes that made it really easy for people to follow so that they could either replicate what another charity had done for their organisation, or they could take as much learning as possible from it. So maybe you had a different situation, but you were, or a different problem to solve, but you were using the same sort of tools and you had the same sort of affordances in terms of either digital exclusion or safeguarding or sort of something like that. And so what we really want to do is generate this culture of reuse, and recipes is our way to do it. I should also say that we were sort of getting ready to do some user testing with people just at the point at which the COVID crisis emerged. And we decided very quickly to pivot what we were doing to make recipes live and to focus on recipes that would help organisations deliver services in the very changed landscape that COVID has brought. So we focused a lot on online service delivery. We focused in some cases on internal tools or internal processes that we weren't originally sort of planning to do at that stage. And I should also say that we sort of built a prototype website and got it live in about 2 weeks by reusing something. So we reused a lovely content management system called Craft to do that. And we also started talking to an organization called Snook, who are a wonderful service delivery organization. Normally they and FutureGov are slightly competitive with each other, but actually we worked together as one really big team, Cast, FutureGov and Snook, to build the recipes platform. So FutureGov was sort of designing the format. We were building the content management system and helping to manage it. And Snook were talking to the lovely charities who very kindly and generously were giving their recipes. And that's probably a pretty good overview, I think. And
No, that's great. It's a really brilliant initiative. I do really love it. And the great thing today is we're going to bring it to life a little bit more by actually drilling down, obviously, on one of those recipes in particular that I mentioned in the introduction. So, Fariha, you've actually contributed a recipe, this recipe on providing devices and training to increase digital inclusion. Can you tell me what the actual users and the needs you were trying to actually serve through this recipe were?
Yeah, sure. So you see, I would start with by highlighting a very important thing that some, you know, getting online can seem pretty scary if you've never done it before. And even if it is more, it's more scary if you just don't know how to make use of the internet. So our service recipe is all about how you can use the internet to the most of the crisis that we are all stuck in. So there's lots of great reasons to for us to do that recipe. Firstly, just a simple human reason we wanted to share. We wanted to reach out to the more people out, you know, who might be struggling with digital skills or who might be struggling as a charity or as an organization to reach to more people, and especially the vulnerable people who were cut off from the major sources of help due to COVID. There are lots of, as I've said, there are lots of different reasons why people should be technically equipped or should be digitally equipped. And some of them we have mentioned in our recipe, such as like being in touch with people, searching and applying for work, follow hobbies, fill in forms, get weekly shopping, or even staying healthy. During COVID-19, as you can see, our recipe is very much focused on getting devices out to people, because one of the main reason why we have actually offered to be part of this extremely amazing project was to highlight an issue that prevails in Northumberland, and I think in majority of the country at the moment. People don't have access to Wi-Fi, and they were mainly dependent on libraries, community centers, local shops to access Wi-Fi, check their emails, or, you know, be connected to each other. The users, the majority of our users of our charity are asylum seekers and refugees and from BME backgrounds, who always, you know, in their life are dealing with financial problems, dealing with language barriers, isolation. So these are the barriers that we were looking to tackle. And we could only do this by reaching out to them. The first barrier was how to reach out to them through devices, because if you don't have a device, if you don't have the resource or means to connect to internet, there's no point of talking about digital skills. You know, that's another step. So firstly was to give them a tool to actually connect them to either our tutors or either to the wider world. Or the main reason was how we can give them access to call their families, how to help them do video calling. So if you look at our recipe, we have actually mentioned a very simple step, starting from WhatsApp, reaching out through Facebook groups, reaching out through phones, reaching out to text messages. And thank you to, I would like to say a huge thank you to Good Things Foundation and devices.now, because through that campaign, we were able to actually deliver devices and connect people to their loved ones.
Good. Yeah, that's brilliant. As you say, those are really critical user needs. I think we've seen them really coming to the fore in lots of different areas through the lockdown. Could you explain a little bit more about, I guess, the key steps that are actually in the recipe that you followed to increase the inclusion, the digital inclusion of those people?
So we have used, as I've said, we've been partnered with Good Things Foundation for a year now. And as soon as the devices.now campaign was in talk, we were invited to be part of the pilot project, through this which we identified people who were looking for a device, who never had an access to device. And here I'm talking about a lot of also the multiple occupancy houses as well, where 4 to 5 people are living in an asylum accommodation but do not have access to Wi-Fi broadband. Also, I think we would need to consider, our consideration was how much it is going to cost to people. So thank you to devices.now that the initial data was already covered. And we looked at how we can engage with them. But we identified those people who were critical in need, who actually filled in the criteria of the most vulnerable, who could not access to other sources of help. So we distributed the devices, we connected them through the internet, then we started providing them the support online through their desired channels. So what we did was we set up a centralized system where people would call in or leave a text, and then we actually left it to the user how they wanted some support from us, rather than, because you see, Jonathan, here we are talking about dealing with those people who are already in a fear of coronavirus, who are already do not and anxious about what's going to happen next. So we thought, why not leave it to people, give them options to choose from, that maybe, because our A might not be their B, so it's like every size doesn't fit all. So we actually asked them through surveys, what is their most desirable source of connection? And most of them, they wanted to have connection through Facebook groups, WhatsApp, because it's free and it's more ideally for a lot of people to use. But also a lot of people are engaged through Zoom, engaged through Google Meet for the sessions like eSoul sessions and digital skills workshop.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I love about this recipe and about the project in general is it's about taking things that exist around us already. There's lots of stuff in the world already. We don't necessarily need more stuff. We just need to use the things that are around us a bit better. I think it's also really powerful because it's an example of organizations working together. You have people like Good Things Foundation and devices.now and Being Woman all working together. And for me, this feels really hopeful. I think for a long while, the charity sector has been forced into competing with each other through either sort of competition for funding or competition for volunteers or territory or all sorts of things. And what this says to me is that actually things are better when we collaborate. And I think it's lovely to hear the way that Fahid talks about sharing. You know, sharing is a really, really, really important mechanism. Collaboration is an important mechanism, and finding other charities that can build part of your service for you, because that's just what they do, like Good Things Foundation, is another really important mechanism. So there's so much sort of exciting stuff to unpack in just this one recipe around how the sector can work together. And then you get the lovely advantage of the fact that because it's been made open, because it's been shared in a format that's easily reusable, you then get other charities like Hestia, come along and say, okay, well, there's something in there that we can use. And that to me is something really powerful and really exciting. And I hope that as we move beyond the crisis and into the sort of like the rebuild phase, that actually we remember what it feels like to work together, and how much more powerful it is if we work together. You know, we really want the recipes platform and all of what we do really to be by charities for charities. That's sort of something we've set up front, and it's something that we think is really important.
Yeah, and I think I would like to add up to what Chris has just said, that there's so much existing stuff here, and this is what our recipe was all about, and we wanted to share this message that we don't have to start from the beginning. Yes, we are in a crisis, but we should look at innovative ways to work together. Like Learn My Way is a brilliant resource from Good Things Foundation. We don't have to replicate it or make new ways. It already covers most of the things. So we thought, why not put our resources in recruiting digital champions? Because that was what missing. So the content was there, but the resource was not there to deliver it. So I think this all is like a focus on how we can build up more resources to work together, how we can be more on the same page, because a charity sector has done amazing work through this crisis, and lots of new groups have been formed, lots of smaller charities have worked along with the other charities, and it's a time for us to self-reflect that when we can achieve so much through crisis, are we going to continue this way? Or is it just like a phase that we're in? So I think this is something that we need to look, that we have impacted lots of people, and the focus should be on the people rather than competing within each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Want to bring Eve in now, because Eve is a user of Service Recipes. So I'm really keen to understand her experience. So Eve, can you tell me, what sort of brought you to Service Recipes in the first place?
Yeah, so even sort of pre-COVID, we were very aware that digital exclusion was an issue for many of the people that we support, but it can almost feel like a kind of too big a problem to solve, because you have all of these elements like hardware, data, training, like logistics of getting stuff to people. But the thing that COVID made was this, it made this need really acute, and it made the need for us to respond really clear. You know, and really overnight we were switching to remote forms of support. So, you know, lots of our face-to-face interactions were now over the phone, which is brilliant that we were able to do that. But there was still a remaining kind of very human need of, you know, those face-to-face interactions people had. A lot of what made those really special was seeing, you know, a friendly human face, you know, someone who's working alongside you to support you. And for some people, you know, it's not quite the same over the phone. So we knew that, you know, video calling and video support was something that, you know, we really needed to look at quite urgently. And also some of what Fariha was saying, you know, around the kind of wealth of resources that are available if you, you know, are regularly online and kind of know how to search those things out. You know, all the mutual aid groups that were set up, you know, over the last few months. You know, if you're not confident even using a smartphone, then, you know, you're automatically excluded from a lot of that. You know, and the work we do is all about empowering people, you know, to make choices for themselves, you know, and suddenly people's choices were really limited. But as I mentioned, like the problem had seemed sort of too big to solve. So kind of coming across Being Women's Service Recipe, just it made it so much easier to kind of see that, you know, okay, we can't tackle all of these things, but something is possible. You know, we can have an impact here. And others who are working with, you know, some of the same kinds of groups who are experiencing the same sort of vulnerabilities, you know, another organization has gone and done this. And it just made that, it made it all so much easier to approach and start thinking about what we could do.
Brilliant. So I'd like to understand just in a little bit more detail how you actually used the service recipe. So what you actually did, I guess. Could you just talk us through that a little bit more, please?
Yeah, so I think that the first thing is probably just sharing my excitement about finding, the recipe that kind of helped to break it down. And actually just, I think in that, being able to share something with colleagues who are all kind of motivated to do something about this, but maybe didn't quite know what we needed to do, kind of immediately got it. Hestia has a workforce, people come to work at Hestia because, they really want to work alongside people in that really empowering way. Until relatively recently, that work has generally been done in a face-to-face setting. So, not only are many of our service users digitally excluded, but, many of our staff also don't feel confident doing something about this. So I think the main thing was just to kind of build that alignment around what we needed to do. And then sort of talking more about, okay, what do we actually want to do? Identified some of our mental health services where, there's a cohort of people who, really willing and able to kind of start their digital journey, but just, didn't have the hardware or data or confidence and skills. So just kind of borrowing things from the recipe, like, just doing using Google Forms to do a really simple screener. That really helped us to kind of understand, what the needs are and be confident that, our approach was the right one. It's early days, but, even the initial data we gathered from that screener is already proving really useful for kind of planning and, thinking about fundraising. Data is always really important for things like funding and planning. Word's also spreading about the work we're doing around at Hestia, which is really nice to see, like actually service managers proactively getting in touch and saying that they've heard a little bit about what we're doing in Bromley, which is where we're starting with, and themselves recognizing this need and maybe having wanted to do something about it but not being sure if we had the resources or where to start, now know that they can talk to the central team about that. Yeah, and I mentioned that we're focusing on one of our mental health services for this. Actually mental health cuts across, all of our services. So, the service in Bromley is focused on people with mental health problems, but, domestic abuse, refuges, supporting people with modern slavery, trauma is a common factor. So our hope is that starting, with a focus on mental health and that, one-to-one support via video, peer support, but also, helping people to access digital mental health resources, we'll have a model that we can apply across Hestia. Mm.
Good. So I'm sensing that it really helped you to accelerate the speed with which you could actually deploy some of these ideas moving forward more quickly and more simply. Do you have any kind of sense of, how much time it saved you, how much effort it might have saved you?
Oh, it's not something I've quantified, but even kind of having those initial conversations, it's, who would you need to bring in? You'd need to bring in your governance team, your IT team, service delivery managers. You would need to, you'd probably get really hung up on some of those kind of initial questions about, data and security, before even getting something mobilized. Usually a project like this, you might spend a couple of months sort of just trying to get approval to try something out. But I think partly, COVID being a bit of a help in some ways in terms of the recognition of the need to do something like this, but also just providing that the reassurance that, yes, there are some risks attached to doing this, but, are they acceptable in relation to, the need that's there? They definitely are, and we're not the only organisation that's taking on, some of these risks, which really helps.
Yeah, brilliant. So, Fariha, you obviously contributed this recipe. What was that process like? Was that, was that simple? Was that hard? Just want to get a sense.
I think when you are contributing a recipe, or even when you are contributing your voice or your idea to a wider network, you're always anxious that, you're always think of whether we'll be criticized, how it will be accepted. And listening to Eve today and about so much, how it is, our recipe has contributed to Hestia, that itself is such an uplifting thing for us, because we are really a big fan of Hestia, because I think Hestia actually has built up such a foundation for domestic abuse for refugees. And I think from their point of view, we've been able to start up and try and accommodate refugees for domestic abuse for refugees here in Northumberland, which was never addressed before. So I think you learn from each other. I was just looking at Hestia yesterday. They've created this lovely hashtag, Life Beyond Crisis. So you see, it's again, I'll go to Chris, rather than we come up with a new hashtag, this is a lovely hashtag. And you know, the more we write about any update, we should better use it. It's like uplifting each other. You know, so when we were writing this recipe, in the process, we were thinking, how it's going to be accepted. We're a very small charity and you know all these thoughts, but we thought, no, we'll give it a go. And I would like to give a huge shout out to Meg from Snook here. She was very, very helpful. She made the process so easier for us to put something together like this and go through everything step by step. So I think it's a cumulative effort. And again, thanks to Chris for doing this, you know, bringing this initiative, giving us a chance, you know, because when you're a small charity, you're always thinking how to make up there. And we've been very lucky that we've been supported by a lot of people. And Hestia using it, as I've said, it's again a big thing for us because we get inspired from the founder, Jim Horn, by, you know, and we get to know that, oh, Hestia is using this. So it's again a big thing for our volunteers who supported. I did share it with our team as well. And they were very uplifted. And it's obviously gone into our annual general meeting as well and our annual account. So I think that's a great thing to add.
Brilliant. So Chris, can you tell me how many service recipes there are now in total and what sort of areas they're covering? Just kind of give me a little bit of a flavour of that.
Yeah, sure. So at the moment, there are 23 recipes in total. There are another 20 in progress at the moment. And we'd love to hear from anyone who's got an idea for a recipe. And even if it's not your service, even if it's someone else's service, then do let us know. We can go and talk to them. At the moment, a lot of them focus very much on sort of things that were emerging needs at the start of the crisis. So we worked a lot with an amazing person called Nissa Ramsey, who is really good at sensing need and looking through large amounts of data from charities, and some of the funders shared sort of grant application data with us so that we could do a bit more needs analysis. And we tried to look for patterns within there. And the patterns mainly are around things like safeguarding, dealing with digital exclusion, using new tools, how to support your staff, especially, you know, when those staff are dealing with emotionally difficult subjects and would normally be supported in the office by their colleagues, but now are having to be supported remotely. And then, you know, everything from content design, which obviously as you move more and more things online, the words and how people find them are super important, through to sort of really tiny things like how to take a whole load of internal documents and make them available to others. So it ranges from things that would at first sight to a technologist like me seem really mundane, and it's so useful that these sort of very, very simple things are being made available to other people. You know, the thing we realized right at the very beginning of the crisis was that basic everyday IT functions were just not there, because they tended to reside in offices rather than on laptops and with people. And so a lot of our initial response was in supporting those organizations with things that at first sight might seem, you know, incredibly simple, but are actually incredibly hard to do if you're having to do it for the first time, or you're having to do it on a cloud service that you've never used before, or things like that. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, our aim moving forward is to keep on looking for user needs and seeing how people are solving these things really well, and charity needs. But also to hopefully branch out into sort of some of the sort of newer ways of service delivery that are emerging as we head into the sort of like the rebuilding phase. But being mindful of the fact that, you know, things might lock down again, either locally or nationally, and that we need to support people with the sort of next phase of of their work taking services online or building digital services. I think one thing that's really fascinating me that I think is really useful to think about is often when you're dealing with needs for a new service, the temptation is to design something completely from scratch and have some bespoke software made or to customize some software. And as somebody who's a software engineer, that sort of is both exciting and fearful, because the more lines of code that are written, the more fragile those systems are. And actually it's often better in some ways to look at what's out there and either adapt that or even better adapt some of your organization's workflows and behaviors to match the software. You end up with a far more reliable solution and something that's a lot more cost-effective in the short term and the long term. So I think one of the things that I've been excited about seeing these recipes and seeing how the sector's responded to the crisis is that actually they've built a lot of very resilient services quite quickly by adapting processes to off-the-shelf things. And I think that's something that's really fascinating and that we should really carry on with as we sort of move forward.
Yeah. I mean, certainly from my perspective, you know, things I love about this is one, it's need based, so it's need driven. So that's key. And two, it's based on real experience. So things that are proven by charities who've used them. So it's that kind of that let's reuse what we know works. So I love all of that. I think it's brilliant.
Totally. And the other thing to say is that one of the things that excites us is it's both large charities sharing their experience and systems that they've built with far greater budgets and digital teams and digital skills. But there's also smaller charities in there as well. You know, it's lovely to see organisations like Being Woman doing things like this. It's lovely to see organisations like Chain getting involved, you know, sort of small charities who really punch above their weight in so many ways, being open and sharing and doing doing this sort of work and helping to sort of educate and help the sector. It's such a lovely thing to see.
So I want to ask Evan via Iha, are there any other service recipes you've been looking at for your charities?
Quite a few. Whenever we're kind of looking at doing something differently, like I remember to kind of keep an eye on what's coming up on there. But particularly Barnardo's, I think I've learned a lot from the work that they've been doing, and they've been brilliantly transparent about, you know, even things like the, you know, their risk assessment processes and that sort of thing. But one particular recipe that, you know, been looking at lately is around young people and peer support. Peer support is something that happens, you know, across our services. And many people who are service users or ex-service users have just been doing brilliant things off their own back. But something we started to talk about is, you know, how can we do this more intentionally so that, you know, people don't have to start from scratch, so that they've got support, so a wider range of people can actually lead activities as well as take part in them. So building some resources, some guidance, you know, simple how-tos, that sort of thing, we think will be really useful.
Fariha, have you been looking at any?
Yeah, we always, you know, look at, and I think as I've said, we're all learning from each other. I look into a lot of recipes lately which has been published, and as I think Barnardo's, I would pick up on that because we did look at that as well, because we have quite a, you know, we've got young people as well, and we do not have a service for young people, so just to have like a baseline and to have some temporary accommodation for them and to how to connect to Barnardo's in the longer term, that actually helped us understand how they work and what is their ethos like and how open they are into sharing. So yes, we've been looking. And I also would like to touch on this, on something, Jonathan, that I think I'm very keen on, that, okay, we've done everything, most of the organization have responded, but what's next now? Because we talk about digital too much, but then we forget about what is the base point of digital, is the data. Do we have resources to actually survive for the data? Because data is expensive. How are we going to tackle this? Are we going to look out for a better campaign, like, better campaign or better connections with the bigger corporate organizations such as EE, data providers, BT? How we can work together to make sure that we are, you know, we are able to cope with the crisis, or we are able to survive as well? Because, you know, we've all responded, we've been resilient, but what is the recovery phase going to be like? Are we going to go back to the normal face-to-face? Or if not, then what measures are in place, such as where is the data going to be? Because it's a big, another kind of income, you know, expenditure for charities and for the other organizations, because data is costly. And there are some areas where you would not be able to get connections. So for example, there are certain areas in Northumberland where you only get the connection from Vodafone. So if we don't have Vodafone Hub, how do we reach to the people there? So there's still people who are excluded digitally, who are socially excluded. So I think we should all be looking, and I would request that the service recipes, or we can always look at a campaign or a service recipe who only tackles us or guides us how we go from here, how we reach out to the people where it's not in our hands, it's mainly to the other organizations, like bigger organizations who provide signals or data. And if we are using Zoom, how much data that eats, you know, how much that data that's been used by the service users, because as a charity, we might be able to afford it. As if I'm talking about myself, okay, I can have Wi-Fi and broadband in my house, but what about that user who does not even have the money to afford food? How would they go out and buy data? If they don't have a bank card, how would they go out and be on a plan for £15 a month for unlimited data? How would that work? So these are some questions I would like you to self-reflect on.
Yeah, no, I think you raised some really good points there. Both how can we get lower cost data packages? And also, I think, you know, this concept of how maybe can we do design so that we burn less data. I've been looking at some of the initiatives that are coming out of Africa, and they're doing some really wonderful work there because they don't have the high bandwidth infrastructure we have. So it kind of drives it. But actually, I think we could learn a lot in this country from some of those initiatives as well. I want to go to Chris at this point and actually say, what's next for service recipes? What's coming down the line? You've said there are some more in the pipeline, obviously, as well, but have you got any more innovations, developments you're planning?
So obviously we're never standing still, and we're trying to sort of learn from how people are using recipes. One of the things that we're really interested in, and that obviously we're inspired, and this conversation is a really good example of it, is how we understand and how we catalogue how recipes are reused by other organizations and learn from that. But also how we can go and talk to funders and say, well, look, this organization made something and they've shared it freely and loads of other people are using it now. How can you reward that charity who shared? How can you help them if they've developed a tool themselves? How can you help in the maintenance of it? If they're developing sort of patterns or workflows, how can that be best supported? And also how those funders can proactively sort of work with their network of grantees to sort of to make reuse a really, really important thing. So I think that's one thing that we're looking at. Another thing we're really interested in is things that didn't work. I think, you know, sort of learning from things that didn't work and understanding how not to make the same mistake again is super important. That requires a whole other level of confidence for an organization to admit that things didn't work, but it can have a massive impact as well. And then finally, we're sort of actually going to be prototyping something pretty soon where, as digital agencies and charities are working on new products together, we're going to be getting them to work in the open all the way through. And one of the open outputs at the end will be a recipe. So, you know, as soon as they know it works, it'll be published under open licenses and the recipe will be there for other people to use. So that sort of is taking an extra step forward and sort of understanding that these things do have a power, that sharing is important. And if we build it into the process of creating something, then it will, you know, hopefully have even greater impact, and that the money spent on creating that thing will have so much more value for the sector. So that, those are just a few things that we're sort of thinking through at the moment.
And can I just quickly add this something to this, Jonathan, because Chris is so openly and very, you know, it's so nice of him to actually think of these ways of how the funders can actually come and collaborate with the smaller organizations. I would also say that sharing, and we have picked up at such a human emotion, the people like us, we are a very small charity. If you're building up an app, we're also very open that, you know, we're open to sharing it. So rather than a bigger organization replicates that idea, it will be great if they come together and, you know, that they take that idea and maybe with bigger funding can replicate it across the country rather than building something of their own. So that is a way of rewarding the charities, that accepting their ideas and turning into reality into a bigger concept.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. One of the things that we are working on that hopefully will come to light soon is we've been thinking about how organisations can share ideas and share their sort of work in progress with other people so that we can build sort of collaborations at a far earlier stage, which will help make the thing available to more organisations. The further down the sort of development path software gets or a solution gets, the more unique and special it is to that organization. So if we can get organizations sharing requirements, sharing ideas earlier on, we think we can have a far greater impact in terms of these sort of shared and distributed solutions being built.
Right. Unfortunately, we're just about out of time now. That's been a really fascinating exploration. We've covered an amazing amount of ground there. We've obviously talked all about the Service Recipes Initiative, where that's going. It's been wonderful to bring that to life as well by actually talking about such an important area as inclusion. As I said at the opening, you know, it's really come to the fore now, and it's so important that we as charities are on top of this. And when we're thinking about digital service delivery, that we're not actually excluding particularly vulnerable segments of society. So it's been a fascinating exploration. Before we finish, I just want to say that we're going to be putting any resources and links that we've referred to today, we'll make sure that those are put on the Charity Digital website. And if you as listeners have enjoyed this pod, please like it and share it so that other people can find it as well. So that's all I've got time for today. I really want to say thank you very much to Eve, Fatiha and Chris for their time. It's really been fascinating. Thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.